Good afternoon. This is Richmond Independent Radio News. I'm George Goodrich. This week on Richmond Independent Radio News, we'll talk to Dr. McKenna Brown of the VCU School of World Studies. We take a trip to Jackson Ward and visit the Black History Museum and discover Richmond's underground bicycle culture.
This is the second annual Evil Fool's Day Cycle Slaughterama. We get as many bicyclists from around the country together and we have some silly events.
On April 9, 1865, Robert E. Lee surrenders to Ulysses S. Grant at Appomattox Courthouse, ending the Civil War. April 13, 1743, the third President of the United States, Thomas Jefferson, is born. This is WRIR News. Income Tax Day, April 15th, is fast approaching, and the city of Richmond would like to help out. Matt Beckwith has this report.
This Saturday, the Greater Richmond Earned Income Tax Credit Coalition is offering free tax preparation assistance at city libraries. People earning $35,000 or less a year may qualify and could be entitled to a refund of up to $4,300. The Internal Revenue Service estimates 25% of Virginians who qualify for the tax credit do not claim it on their tax return. Carol Ann Pacer Ramsey is the administrator of the Greater Richmond EITC. She says they are offering free assistance to help more Richmond residents keep their hard-earned money.
For example, I talked with a girl the other day. She had $11,000 in income. She's got two children. She paid someone to do her taxes, and then she got an instant refund, which cost her well over $400. This is not someone who can afford to hand over $400.
Each of the city's nine library branches will be manned with two tax preparers, including one fluent in Spanish at the Belmont branch.
It's all electronic. It's all online. If they have a checking or savings account, they can probably have their money in their account within 7 to 14 days.
Pacer Ramsey says she hopes the libraries are packed with people taking advantage of the free service. For more information, you can call the EITC hotline at 804-649-1311. For WRIR News, I'm Matt Beckwith.
Last fall, Richmond's Lewis Ginter Botanical Garden began construction of a 1.5-acre garden for children. The garden will house water features, vegetable patches, international villages, and a fully accessible treehouse. WRIR's Aaron Hickey visited the new children's environment.
If you walk through the Rose Garden across the bridge at the Lewis Ginter Botanical Garden, you come to small hills of brown dirt surrounded by an orange temporary fence. Across the string-marked garden plots is the frame of a two-story treehouse. Tree trunks support the structure and branches stretch to the sky through the roof and windows. But don't let the playful atmosphere fool you. Tom Brenda is the assistant executive director of the Botanical Garden. He says there was a great deal of effort put into ensuring children are provided with opportunities to learn, both through unstructured play and structured activities.
The materials that we bring in there that will be the raw materials where the children can build forts, they can build landscapes, they can play, make mud pies, throw mud at their brothers and sisters, all the things that we did as we were growing up. Fortunately, we might have had a backyard or a lake or river place that we could do that in. For many children, they don't have that anymore living in these urban and suburban environments. So.
Here, parents will be able to take a seat in the leafy overlook while their children explore the enclosed space below. 500 feet of winding decking will rise to more than 8 feet above the ground and lead to the treehouse. Planners made sure the entire park was compliant with the Americans with Disabilities Act. Gwen Williams operates an inclusive daycare center that serves children with mild to moderate disabilities. She's excited to see a facility where all of her children would be able to participate.
I have little ones and this is going to be ideal.
There's also plenty of room to run here.
Exactly,
roll on
that's
the
what
lawns,
they want. They want to be able to...
Right, you know, space to do that.
In fact, the Christopher Reeve Paralysis Foundation has expressed interest in the project and donated money towards its completion. The project has been particularly satisfying to Tom Brenda.
We heard from somebody the other day who'd spent their life in a wheelchair that they've never been up off the ground into a space like this. So here they'll be at treetop level. Yeah, that's pretty powerful for us that we can provide that.
The children's garden and treehouse should be open to the public this fall. But Brenda says there are still plenty of opportunities for Richmonders to donate time and money. For Richmond Independent Radio News, I'm Erin Hickey at the Lewis Ginter Botanical Garden.
Richmond Independent Radio News is looking for thought-provoking commentaries. If you're a Richmond resident and you have something to say, drop us an email, news@wrir.org. You own the airwaves, so grab the microphone and speak your mind.
Here are the many voices of Richmond on WRIR.
Shaco Bottom is not just a business opportunity, it's a neighborhood.
There's nothing there to stop the fire, so with the wind blowing, you pretty much had an inferno.
If you're not doing your job, you get fired. Now, if the mayor doesn't do his job, the voters can fire him.
Richmond Independent Radio News, each Friday at 4 p.m. Radio news for the rest of us. This is WRIR News. This week, Richmond Independent Radio News begins a feature designed to get feedback from Richmond residents on life in the capital city. We sent reporters out to ask people what they knew about the Black History and Cultural Center in Jackson Ward.
Have you ever been to the Black History Museum in Jackson Ward?
Lisa Dalton. It was very fascinating, and I recommend it to anyone.
Chelsea Mayorito. No, never heard of it before.
My name's Alex. Oh, I hadn't heard of it before, okay, but so I'd like to go. Yeah, I like museums a lot.
David?
Are you aware that there's a Black History Museum in Jackson Ward?
Yes, I am, on Clay Street. No, yeah, I've actually walked by it a few times, and they've been closed on the few opportunities that I've, you know, been by there, so I'm definitely intrigued. I know they're having some funding problems right now, so I'd like to help out with that, yeah.
DK Waybright? No, I'm not.
Would that be something you'd be interested in checking out?
Probably not.
Mark Wood. I think it's great. Yeah. Contributes a lot to the city and makes us aware of things that oftentimes don't get talked about in lots of history books.
Rachel, yes.
Have you been before?
No.
No? Something you'd be maybe interested in checking out?
Yeah, being on Black. That would be important for me to go see. Yeah.
In an old mansion on Clay Street, located within Richmond's historic Jackson Ward, resides the Black History and Cultural Center of Virginia. Since its founding in 1981, the museum has told the story of the Black peoples, mostly Virginians, and their passage through history. Jackson Ward at one time was known as the Harlem of the South and contained 93% of Richmond's Black population, according to a 1920 census. This historic district, once torn by segregation, has since been split by highways and urban redevelopment. The Black History Museum, just as the community it teaches about and calls home, is faced with these tides of change, trying to teach the past while looking toward an uncertain future. WRIR's Mike Doolin spoke with Sekou Shabaka, president of the Board of Trustees, in the museum's foyer.
We want to collect, we want to preserve, and we want to tell the story of Black history, not only in Jackson Ward, but in Richmond and the state and beyond. You just can't, when you start telling the history in Jackson Ward, it extends always beyond that. We consider maybe a niche museum. We serve a constituency that maybe others don't target as a constituency. We also would do exhibits that maybe other museums would not do. We can tell the story of John Mitchell and W.W. Brown, which some people never heard of. They've heard of Maggie Walker. But we can tell the story of, in a neutral, objective way, of the Black Panther Party. We can tell the story of lynching. We can display Marian Anderson's gowns. Politically, we also highlight our politicians, and one of the most notable would be our first Black governor elected in the United States, Douglas L. Wilder.
Talking about the present day with the museum and maybe looking into the future of how the museum is going to develop and continue to educate the society around it, I was just wondering how the museum's doing and like what you see its future role is.
Well, interesting you should ask. We have a group of new board members. Many of those persons were part of the leadership. Metro Richmond, they come with so many skills. It's just fantastic. We know that we can't come back and reconvene as we were before. The mission will still be the same. We won't change our mission statement, but that who are we, what do we do, and how do we do it, how we do it may change. Because if our resources diminish, it doesn't mean that we can't be quality. It just means that we will approach our service a little different, and we may have to scale down. But I can guarantee the public that they'll get a quality product when they walk through the door.
Do you see what the impact of development that is going on around Richmond, if that might affect your building location as it is now?
I welcome that question. That's a good question. We absolutely plan on staying here. There's a rejuvenation in Jackson Ward. One of those rejuvenations is a 40% increase in the tax assessment. So the buildings are a little bit more valuable than they were before. In 2007, I think a lot of people would be coming through Richmond and coming through Virginia in terms of 400-year celebration. And we want to take advantage of that. We're going to look back and do some research on 400 years back in terms of what was important to Black people at that time. And here again, it's important that the community has such a museum, because then we will be celebrating the positiveness even in that environment that we were in 400 years ago in terms of what was happening with Black people. But the Performing Arts Center and all of the federal building, the new federal court building that's coming, so many things are changing downtown. The convention center is 2.5 blocks away. That can only help in terms of us servicing that group of people who come through.
Follow-up question on that, just wondering about the community support of the museum.
Well, I mean, it's two ways to look at that. We could look at it micro, M-I-C-R-O, and macro, M-A-C-R-O, and we have support both ways. We have people who have stopped by and given $5 and $8 and $10 and who stopped by to say, what can we do to help? We interviewed a person today who we hope will come and volunteer, and that person was referred to us. There's a group called Sisters of the Yam, a quilting group, and they meet here once a month. They did a quilt and raffle it off, $1,300. Now, you know, big-time museums may say, I lose that on my way to work, but for us, it makes a big difference. And it's the spirit of saying, we want you to continue. We've also, and unnamed, I can't say at this time until there's a greater formulation of a project, but we've had at least 3 inquiries of people saying, we want to raise a large sum for you in any way that we can do that, and let's sit down and talk. And just phone calls saying, you know, we clarify for us, are you closing? And we said, no, we're not closing. We are open by appointment, and before the year's up, we will be open on a daily basis. We feel so good about the outreach and the questions and the inquiry and the offers of help. We didn't always know the effect that we had on the public as well as the effect that the public has on us, but it is pleasing to know that once folk feel that you need help, that you're in a little trouble, those with sincere hearts have stepped forward and just say, use us as you see fit. We'll do anything that we can to help.
Thank you for the information you've given us, and appreciate your time.
You're welcome, sir.
Sekou Shabaka is the Board of Trustees President of the Black History Museum and Cultural Center of Virginia. Former Governor and current Richmond Mayor L. Douglas Wilder continued to make history this week. WRIR's Dustin Richardson was on hand.
If you've been up Broad Street lately, you've noticed that Richmond City Hall is undergoing some changes. But those changes are not merely on the building itself. Wednesday night, Mayor Douglas Wilder announced his budget proposal to City Council. This marks the first time a popularly elected mayor has been able to do so in recent history. In his address to City Council, he made it clear that he plans to shake things up.
As I've said, change is here. Change is in the move and on the move, and change is going to continue at a rapid pace.
Wilder went on to overview how the city can manage its finances with more efficiency while focusing on 3 main objectives.
One, to provide more resources to fight crime. And I'm very pleased to see the actions of the chief and the police force in terms of addressing those needs. We need to provide and to focus on education and the needs of our young population. And certainly we need to improve the appearance of our streets through a very aggressive street repair program.
The plan was based on findings from the Mayor's Efficiency and Effectiveness Committee, which was commissioned to rectify the city's former budget woes.
Because it's been done in the past doesn't mean we have to continue to do it.
The committee found that the city was doing well, but there was redundancy in the separate financing and management of many city agencies, such as the city school board.
I want to say positively that the financial condition of the city is stable. However, attention must be paid to long-term fiscal planning to ensure that continued success. Detailed review of school system budget is needed. By detailed review is meant just what those words say, to study the details. As we all know, the devil is in the details. We've got to find the devil.
Wilder's plan also includes raising fees for city services, such as gas and water delivery, but noted that special consideration will be given to those who cannot afford a higher utility bill.
We don't just pass off the fees and say, well, they can pay for this to make this continue. We have to consider the ability of all those persons who utilize those services to be able to pay.
But perhaps the most striking change in Wilder's budget plan is the cutting of unfunded requests, such as civic and cultural activities.
I am not in a position to recommend that we can continue that at this time. We just don't have it. We just are not in a position to afford it.
These cuts, if approved by council, would greatly affect civic programs that have come to rely on city funds in their operating budget. Jeannie Dotz is the executive director of ACORN, the Alliance to Conserve Old Richmond Neighborhoods, which stands to lose $20,000 in marketing money. She is optimistic the city council will make changes of its own.
His budget is maybe part of a negotiating that's going to go on between him and city council. So I think people need to realize that there's going to be some give and take, and maybe some funding for some of these programs will be reinstated.
City council has 1 month to consider the proposal. In that time, the council is expected to host public hearings April 25th and May 4th in council chambers. For WRIR, I'm Dustin Richardson at City Hall.
Richmond Independent Radio News is looking for thought-provoking commentaries. If you're a Richmond resident and you have something to say, drop us an email, news@wrir.org. You own the airwaves, so grab the microphone and speak your mind.
WRIR's got a brand new bag. It's the Brown Bag Lunch Special with your host, Kathy B. Tuesdays at 12:30 here on WRIRLP, Richmond Independent Radio. Radio for the rest of us. Hear what's happening in your community, because WRIR's got a brand new bag.
Papa's got a brand new bag.
This is WRIR News. I'm George Goodrich. The Virginia Commonwealth University School of World Studies is hosting the Crossing Boundaries Film Festival this weekend in conjunction with the Middle Atlantic Council of Latin American Studies. The festival wraps up the year-long Crossing Boundaries lecture series that brought such guests as Sarah Chase and Hans Blix to VCU. Dr. McKenna Brown is the director of the School of World Studies. The school offers programs in cultural anthropology, foreign languages, geography, international studies, and religious studies. Dr. Brown says that combination makes the school particularly well-suited to host the series.
as we in the School of World Studies looked at this opportunity and thought about what is it that we do? What is something in our mission, in our various disciplines that we do? That theme came across several times of crossing boundaries, whether they're language boundaries, religious boundaries, cultural boundaries, boundaries in a community from one to another, national political boundaries. And that sort of vision or that enterprise of learning to successfully cross boundaries and build bridges is a very important part of our mission. So this weekend, our conference is jointly sponsored with MACLIS, which is the Mid-Atlantic Council for Latin American Studies. And one of our faculty members, Professor Christina Turner, in the anthropology program, has done a really great job of organizing that and bringing that together. And as an ancillary activity for the Crossing Boundaries Conference, we have the Crossing Boundaries Latin American Film Series, which is really going to be, I think, a very exciting series of a focus on documentaries, exploring various social themes and issues throughout Latin America.
And to kick off this film festival, mm-hmm. it's my understanding that you have Oscar Arias. He's the former president of Costa Rica. What does he bring to this series?
Oh, great question. This is sort of the, you know, what we call in Spanish the clausura, the closing, the big closing event for our series. And so having someone of his name and stature is just a terrific way to wind up our year-long series. He's also serving as the keynote speaker for the conference, so that brings some cohesion. And, of course, his expertise is of particular interest to the Latin Americanists who are attending the conference. What he brings in particular is his work, his wonderful work in attempting conflict resolution in a peace settlement in Central America. And so his work, which really bridges a variety of disciplines and endeavors, is one that, you know, in the end is an optimistic one. It's a message of hope.
How is it that VCU is able to get such an impressive guest to this program?
Well, through the generosity of the National Endowment for the Humanities. And again, that grant that is housed in our University Honors Program provides for a cycle of events every 2 years. And as I say, it's something otherwise we would never be able to do. The benefit for the institution, for the community, has been tremendous. And for me, it's been particularly moving to see the impact on the students. We actually had our kickoff event almost a year ago. Our first speaker was Sarah Chase. She was a former NPR reporter who covered the fall of the Taliban in Afghanistan, and then she stayed on, resigned as a reporter and stayed on to work in a nonprofit agency. And the experience and insights that this person brought, and she held, we had a standing room only crowd in the Gray Street Theater. The group just held, you know, in rapt attention by her experiences. And she generously stayed for a question and answer period that was quite long. And then after that, we had a reception. And there was a cluster of over a dozen students. And she spoke to them and gave them just such individual attention for 2 hours. You know, it was the kind of exposure that normally a student just doesn't have the opportunity to gain. And it was thrilling to see that the excitement in their eyes and how moved they were. And many of them were asking questions, not just about her experience, but how they might pursue their own interests and inclinations, what kind of career possibilities they would be, what advice she would have for them. So that was our first kickoff event. Then we actually had a second kickoff event last spring, which was a visit by Hans Blix, who was the UN inspector, weapons inspector in Iraq. You know, there were over 1,000 people in attendance in the Siegel Center. I mean, just when he walked in, there was a standing ovation just when he came in. And again, it's just the exposure to kind of newsmakers and experts and people that that the community and the VCU would not have otherwise. So we're very thrilled and very pleased. You know, the response has been great. And then we get feedback after all of these events. I receive emails for weeks afterwards, and it's students, it's other faculty, and it's people in the community saying, wow, thanks. You know, that was great. Never thought I'd see that happen here, or that was something I was always interested in. Now I feel like I know a lot more.
And what's next for the series? What's coming up?
Well, this is our closeout event, which is President Arias. His event is our final event. We are hoping, however, there's a possibility that we'll be able to plan one final sort of closeout event next fall. But you'll have to tune in for further details on that.
Dr. Brown, thank you very much for your time.
You're most welcome, George.
Oscar Arias will be speaking tonight at the Singleton Center for the Performing Arts, starting at 8 o'clock. The presentation is free and open to the public. When we first heard of Slaughterama 2005, we weren't sure if it was a cult horror movie, some kind of new painful sport, or a showcase for a mad bicycle artist collective. As it turns out, it's a strange combination of all three. Last weekend, more than 100 people gathered to show off their cycling prowess and custom bikes in Richmond's Holly Street Park. WRIR's Chris Maxwell and Matt Beckwith were witness to the event.
I'm John. I'm a member of the Cutthroats Bicycle Club. We're a civic organization dedicated to the pursuit of happiness via the bicycle. This is the second annual Evil Fool's Day Cycle Slaughterama. It's a pretty tough name. It's a pretty benign event. We get as many bicyclists from around the country together, and we have some silly events, tall bike jousting, Frogger, six-pack relay race, foot down, numerous other ones. Frogger, basically like the video game Frogger, you have a series of bicyclists who play Frogger himself, and then you have a bunch of people on the outside edges pushing obstacles in the bicyclist's way. They have to go down and hit a certain point and then turn back around and make it back. Whoever makes it back first wins. I mean, you're just as likely to win because you're wearing a completely crazy outfit and are nuts and drunk as you are as if you're an excellent bicyclist. Our bicycle club features about 17 people. There are a couple other clubs around, the Riders of Brohan, the Smashers, you know, various other gangs. We're the Cutthroats. We organize this event because, as anyone that lives in Richmond longer than 10 minutes knows, it's a very apathetic place. So we just take matters into our own hands. We go up to Brooklyn, and we wear a bunch of orange, and we yell at the Black Label bike crew who wears black. And, you know, so they came down this year, and, you know, they're staying with us and hanging out, having a good time. But once we get out there competing, they start yelling at us and throwing beer in our faces and trying to kill us, and it's just a great fun, a lot of fun. I live in the city. The automobile is an inefficient means of transportation, so I ride my bicycle pretty much any time I can. You know, I'm a wuss. Like, in the rain, I'll take the car. A lot of my friends in the rain, they'll take the bicycle, and they'll make fun of me, so...
This has been Richmond Independent Radio News. I'm George Goodrich. I'd like to thank all the volunteers who helped produce this program.
Matt Beckwith.
Aaron Hickey.
Dustin Richardson.
Michael Doolin.
Along with Christopher Maxwell, Sarah Barrett, and Andrew Large. If you would like to comment on our news programming, suggest stories, or become part of Richmond Independent Radio News, drop us an email, news@wrir.org. This is WRIR LP 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.